Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The McCarthy Cup is on its way back to Leaside once again. The first part of a possible double has been achieved by an amazing display of heart, commitment.
Are the 14 men to prevail in front of their loyal band of fans? The subs wait. The double has been achieved.
Hi folks, you're all very welcome to Parky Keeve. Special occasion, I suppose, marking 30 years of the double and special with the Irish Examiner and in conjunction with Marymount Hospice, who, fantastic idea, fundraising lads, that's basically what we're all about. Wear red today, get your red and white on. I'll even wear a red and white mask for 2 minutes when this is over. But look, the most important thing is whatever we're wearing red and white is that people will donate. And I suppose we are looking back to the 30 years, and the lads had the privilege 5 years ago going out waving. I'm one of those class of 25 years this year, and we get no privilege, or else we'll have overcoats on us. But we're looking back, and it's great to be here in the company. Three of my heroes until I started playing against them, I suppose. Delighted to be joined by Sars, great Teddy McCarthy, captain Thomas McKay, and the great Kevin Hennessy, who scored a couple of goals off me before he finished up. I wouldn't remember scoring goals against
Kevin. I do, Kevin. 1993. You cleaned them out.
He did.
They cleaned me out. I was taken off that
day. I got a small bit of retribution. Lads, it's great to have you. I admired you for a long time. As I said, it was a privilege to get to play against the three, albeit I suffered mostly. But we had a couple of good days, so we take those while they're there. Davy Fitz, I think, is telling us all about that as well in the little piece in the preview. So,
and I just hope that you actually get in off your 25-year anniversary as well at the Wave, like some fellas couldn't get in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the thing what it is now, well, I don't know where you're going.
Security's going over the top.
He didn't go.
We have changed a bit, all right. He probably didn't know me, I suppose.
Well, we've the free suits got already, well, but okay. If Ireland goes ahead on the 13th, we'll be getting free overcoats as well. So that's the way I'm looking at it. Les, I'm going to take you back. 89, Cork Hurling was on a low, would it be fair to say? I know you had won All-Irelands in the 80s and that, but the football team under Billy was flying, I suppose, and were themselves in meat rivalry, had taken on a new level. 89, you were involved, Teddy, but the lads, you weren't involved at all, lads. Would you explain?
I had a great year in 89.
But you weren't involved?
No, I had a great year in 89. Captain my team to win a county championship for the first time since 1976 after losing in 88. Fantastic year for me.
I know.
So what are you on about there?
I'm on about the county team.
All right, okay, right.
Okay. What, you were here, Walford Beachy, the Thurles.
I did, in 89, yes.
Why weren't you involved?
Were dropped, weren't picked.
Weren't picked or weren't available, what was
Weren't picked.
Just changes.
Well, look, I suppose 88 had been a bad year as well. We came back, I suppose, 86 after winning the All-Ireland. 87 was the famine was over. Tip beating us in the replay in Killarney. 88, there was a couple of changes came in. There was a new setup, new management there, and things was a bad year for us. 89. I can't speak for Kevin, but I firmly know myself. I was working in the bank, as I can tell, and I got a call one day from two lads to say, can we have 5 minutes with you in an office? So I said, grand, no problem. So it kind of said, look, we're just bringing bearer bad news. We don't have to kind of just kind of say, look, we think you've a lot done for Cork Hurling, and we're making a few changes this year. We're a new selection committee in place, and that we're going to drop you off to selection. So that was kind of February, March, right?
Oh, you know, back then. About 27?
About 27, yeah.
You were about 29, yeah. Kevin Weil? 30?
No, he wasn't. one thing I heard, I don't like it. Two fellas came out to tell me he wasn't on the panel. I've had no one to come on the panel. I just read the teams in the paper. Like anyone else? I was at the match, all right. And Shawnee Gormley cornerback, and one great stuff at cornerback, and full forward.
Full forward.
And then when I went out to the bathroom, I had to drive forwards, at half time, and I'd finish sending me away on two there. And I remember when those particular fellas booing me over the place when I was playing, but.
Why did you have to go to the bathroom? Would you have a few pints that morning?
Of course I did. But then, in 87, I was captain of the side, and I was getting a lot of abuse. I wasn't doing what I was doing, supposed to do. And I knew it was coming, like, you know.
Right.
Like, in the Munster final in 82, I was corner forward, right? And we scored 5-32. I don't know what they got, Waterford. And I got nothing. No.
I never do that.
I remember I got a ball 40 yards out and I for a point. And I could feel the crowd roaring for two over. The keeper caught it, the only he got all day.
Or a 5-32, nothing.
5-32, nothing. I was taken off with 5 minutes to go. And the Emerald Dunham came up and scored 3 points. Right? I knew the right was on the ball then for the All-Ireland final in 82. I was going down to walk one Monday morning. And I walked in every morning about 6 o'clock. I went on to work and I had a paper from downtown. I saw two photographs in, out. That was it. Now, what Gerald, who was coaching at that time, he was age 2 and age 3, two badges, he rang me to tell me what happened, you know. And the Prescott picked the team for the All-Ireland about 2 weeks before the match. And one they heard in the board here heard that the one paper was going to go ahead with the name of the team on the Monday, a week before.
Right.
And it didn't matter to me, I could feel the thing coming from the final anyway. So
And Teddy, would it be fair to say like you were dual star? I'm not saying you weren't, well, Kevin doesn't claim to be fair player like myself.
No, he was a dual star.
Yeah.
Kevin was a dual star.
Yeah, I know. He won an East Cork.
No.
But come here, would it be fair to say from the outside looking in that football was more important? I wouldn't say it was more important, Joe. Like, I know my first memories of you, Kev, was learning songs about you and the Flannans, man, episodes down in Emily, yeah. Epics in the early 80s, 82. I just got in as a first year, and we knew no other player on you, kid. And we had songs about you because we knew no one else. We'd Ray Sampson trying to get a shot at John, a few more lads like that, John Russell.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, would football under Billy have been the thing at the time? Like,
I suppose it's kind of a unfortunate in some ways with the hurling, because in 87, if you go back to 87, obviously Cork won the All-Ireland in 86, and you know Tipperary beat us in 87, obviously in the replay down in Clarny, and my recollections, like, you know, there were two epic games. And you know, it was just a bit unlucky, I suppose, because we could have won that very easily. Not to say we would have won the All-Ireland after, nobody knows, but you know, to go to a replay and to be beaten an extra time in the replay, so there was only a fuck of the ball in it as such, even though they beat us quite comfortably enough, and they got a couple of goals. But you know, you're just wondering in hindsight where we've been after that. But obviously, you know, there was a, you know, the likes of Tom Cashman and a few more,
John Fenton
retired, yeah. You know, so like obviously two huge players for us, so irrespective of what ages they were retiring, there were two huge gaps to fill, you know. And you know, obviously we kind of, things didn't work out for us, obviously, you know, in 88 and 89. But football did take over, obviously, because, you know, there was no back doors that time to straighten that out, so you could be out of the championship in June.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the football then at that stage, you know, started to, you know, come together a bit, obviously, under the auspices of Billy Morgan at the time, you know, great lad. And, you know, I suppose that came off the back of, you know, Cork winning a couple of minor titles in 89, I think, or if I'm not mistaken, in 91, I think they won it 2 and 3 years. And as a result of that, we kind of went on then and won 321 football All-Irelands in Detroit. And that was the backbone of the team from 87 going onwards. And I suppose, as everybody knows, that day, playing Kerry here, no, in fairness to Kerry, we're getting a bit long-tooted now as well at that stage. And you know, we drew with them down here, and obviously we beat them in the replay down Clarny. But just one of the memories of that particular Munster final, obviously, was, you know, the goal that the drawing goal. Well, they went a pint up, and we got a quick go through after messing with John Cairns through his fast thinking, and we got a free up the other end, and that drew the game for us, you know. But Like, I always remember when one thing that stick out in my mind, I was inside the dressing room after, beating a drama Kerry, you know, which was a huge thing for us, and some fella said, look, there's a possibility that the replay could be next Sunday, and whoever said it inside the dressing room, we don't care, he said, we'll hop on a bus now, we'll go around and take them tonight if we have to, you know. So, like, that was the start of, I suppose, the surgeons of the football at that stage.
Yeah, and well-deserved, and they were great battles, and as I said, well, on to the winter, I suppose, then, of 89, like, you know, you had a great win, you won your first championship in a good while, and for yourself, I remember, I was working with you at the time, and it meant a lot to you. I remember meeting you at that Christmas party, the famous old TSB Bank Christmas parties, they were legendary nights.
They were good nights.
I remember we had a chat about it, and
you beside me of captaining Cork, what do you think that?
Yeah, well, it was either you or him, I suppose, was it? That was the final, Sarah's in the Glen, wasn't it?
But he hasn't got over it since that day. He's still very upset about it, like, you know, so... Yeah, look, and what I mentioned about 89 there, look, I mean, these things happen in sport, right, you know, so they clap in the back, you know, it's only a couple of inches from the kick up the arse, right, as they say, right, you know, and it was a kick up the arse, I was disgusted, very disappointed, but I had to knuckle down, I didn't think I was finished at 27, so look, and any new management that comes into play, you got to respect it, and I took it on the chin, and went away and played away with my club. We were beaten badly here in the 88 county final by the Bars, I'd say 10, 12, 15 points defeat. I was captain, I remember, in the tunnel underneath, crying my head off, because you, a club like Glen Rovers, to get the cap of the team and to be the county final, all you want to do is win, you know, and we are waited so long for it. We were kind of, we were after losing a good few, when we needed that success in 76, so like when 89 came, it was special, you know, it was special. And then obviously back those days, the club that won the county championship had the honour of actually nominating the captain, so I got the honour at that stage, and obviously, after that, got the call from the Cannon.
And he wasn't the Cannon at the time, but did you know much about Father O'Brien?
I was to coach the minor team. I was in 79.
Okay.
And he was coaching the under 21 team in 82.
He was there in 1984.
So you'd all have known him?
We
mean, we won minor, the same team, moved up to 82.
Yeah, but he was joint manager, coach with Justin McCarthy in 84, the All Ireland series. So a good few of those come through with O'Cannon. Yeah,
but
yeah.
He was always maybe going to get the job, but it seemed like a long time coming, did it? Would that be fair to say?
I don't know the politics of it.
Today, you know the inside track there, do you?
Of which one, the Cannon?
The Cannon getting the job?
Can't recollect now, really. There was a bit of controversy over that, was there?
I couldn't tell you.
He more senior clubs, in, as Jack Nicholson said, he more clubs. He was coaching UCC, he coached Sales, he was coaching
Blackrock.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was Paris Priest there, yeah.
He coached Paris, a bit like Taylor.
Huh? A bit like Dalo, more clubs than Tiger Woods.
They get paid for now.
Liz Moore
was strong
as well.
Oh, yeah, I see. I knew it was going to come back.
You better be at the same
I suppose he'd be on the north side. Charlie Teddy as well. There's an old junior championship coming up today.
There was a Blackrock goalkeeper. And his mother couldn't afford to have a jade in the year.
No dinner dance.
Gone. Because dinner dance is lose money, you see.
Everything was gone to the
north side of the lane.
Keep going.
I'll take you back to the Cannon, or Father Brian, as he was then, I suppose. Like, that was some stroke of psychology to arrive to the first training session with a care that said 90C27, and I talked to Joe Cunningham about that yesterday, and he said unbelievable deal. He said, like, not everybody was there because maybe you were tied up with the Glen and Munster club and stuff, but he said that's what he arrived in. It was a white opal
manta,
but Les, there was a bit of, wasn't that was like that was before his time thinking, like.
But I mean, it was wasn't just about the registration plate, like you mentioned, an opal white manta, I think it was, and like you had the allies back then. Allies were a special thing.
There was
a
few bob in the priesthood, like.
Priesthood,
like, he was in, yeah.
Yeah. And the screech of the brakes when he come around, like, he loved the speed, loved a bit of flash, and he loved that, right, and to arrive and then to see the fellas were asking the question, like, where's he going with the car and where's he going with the registration plate? And he was straight up. Yeah, 90 for the year, C for Cork, and we've 26 titles, and it will be 27 this year. And he was very, very strong about it. He started the trend and he started getting into Villa's heads at that stage. Now, maybe a lot of us laughed. Maybe he was saying, I certainly didn't kind of think it after coming where I came from in 89.
But there was a good 20, 30 come down every night to watch training, right? And somebody walked into the dressing room and he said, come here, fella. I see a guy with a registered truck outside the front of the guy. We're playing the alarm fine. He comes out straight to the game. I said, stop me there now. Go over and look, see who has that car. And then talk me around there, see who can get this here. Oh, yeah, he did, and they went down, of course. They were made to do it. They told him to walk. See, he did it, they just to get it, tell him.
And you were all familiar with Gerald coming in as coach as well, lads, as well. You'd have all known his ways and had, would have dealt with him, would you?
I wouldn't have worked under him.
I wouldn't have walked under him either, to be honest with you. But look, I mean, as a player though, he was one of the greatest players Cork ever produced. I mean, for the style that he brought to the game, but the directness to control the ball off the air and take it out of the air and like not into the hand but off the hurl and hit it, right? You know, he was
brilliant. Was there something there that you thought, Kevin, straight away, this, we're on to something here?
Yeah, I worked with him in 82 and 83. He was a coach in those 2 years. We lost. But, no, he was a very good coach. I thought the best coach I had amongst all of them was Justin McCarthy. But Gerald was next, tight next.
Yeah.
He didn't go to Waterford after.
He did, sure, yeah, he did. And he brought a bit of fire into Waterford as well.
Where did Cannon O'Brien come in the equation? So,
you weren't saying Cannon was any good? I mean, you saying Cannon was no good, right? Does Justin to Gerald, where the Cannon?
He was after that.
All right, okay. I'm just getting it right.
That's all. You didn't do the National League really, and you didn't really take it too seriously. Can you remember anything out of the league? Any like that would say things were going well, or there's a list?
I played against you
that league.
Do you want to tell you the truth? We was playing, you get the team out of the paper. That's how you know the team was. The team of the paper heads for the Galway the weekend is fairly tight now. Good team going up. We went to dress them. There were 14, 15 changes there. You know one for them, you know the others. We had a Kildallery Slick, the one sent to Manon. And he was in the bank too, wasn't he?
Yes.
And we stopped from down Kildallery. He went to a house, another house, another. This fella came out with socks stuck in his boots and walked down the hallway. Because they weren't even there, like they couldn't travel around 15 anyway, you see. So, like, Cork never took the league seriously.
Back that time, yeah, look, I mean, played at the time it was played, like, if guys were involved in club championship and you weren't kind of...
We played you before Christmas, and for the one and only time in my life, I was named at number 6, and the man on my left here came jogging in towards me wearing 11. It didn't go well for me. It was my last time wearing 6, and first high ball he went up on one of the sky high ones and brought it down. That was my tingling gainer was running to move, go back in the corner, you, he says. How did you balance the whole thing with the football and hurling? There was a few rumours knocking around, like that the hurling management were thinking you were flat out with the footballers on a certain night, and maybe the football management thought you were flat out with the hurlers, and there was a certain amount of confusion as to what was going on, like, but you were keeping yourself fresh overall.
I didn't know where that came from. I actually couldn't, because my mother laughed at me at the time, didn't I? She says, you can't keep this up, going out every night, so I don't know where that came from.
But you were a good man to tell it yourself, I'd say.
I know, it's look, at that time, sure, look, we were beaten in 87 in the Munster finals, we declared Pat Dillon in football.
Yeah.
And obviously we were beaten in the Munster Championship in 88, so we declared Pat for football. So it wasn't as bad as what people kind of made out, probably on the 90s, plus it was probably a little bit more difficult, all right. But no, in fairness to the management team, we're good. Like, and that time, you obviously 2 weeks between each game and a bar to be a drawing game. You know,
and you so didn't switch it,
wasn't it? So, you know, in fairness, no, it was as, it's not as difficult then as what it would be now, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
We shared the ground, didn't we? In 1990, right? If you trained the 6th first night, we trained the 8th, and vice versa the following night. Yeah. There was no problem with that.
Yeah. Do a bit of both.
And how did that rumour come then? Did I just claim one after the other then if you were saying
that? Well, you were a good man to throw that. Like, we wouldn't train every day. Like, I mean,
we bet you, Teddy. We don't try it now, yeah.
No, I mean, we...
No, we bet you.
Let's on the championship, and you know, for viewers, just to remember, this is all about Marymount, but it's great recalling details with the lads as well, like, and all that's remembered and not remembered as well. But you took care of Kerry and Waterford, lads, and on into the old rivals. It was my debut year, 90. We got a hockey in off Limerick, and I think Tip beat Limerick, but Tip were nearly raging hot favours going into that Munster final. And you were out with an ankle injury.
Yeah, I did my ankle. I think it was a challenge game up in Mayo, over some kind of long weekend now, April maybe, Easter weekend, I think, and I just blew my ankle, so I was out. Just I was out then until the semi finals.
Yeah.
So I came on as a sub, I think, in the semi final of the hurling, and you know, so. The rest was history after that.
And while you were out with a finger.
Yeah, we played the Cochrane 21s here about 3 weeks before. The Munster final, and in a challenge game earlier, I went out to get a ball, and obviously there was a pull, and badly damaged my finger, and I had to get a pin inserted, and all I was thinking about, being captain of the team, getting ready for the Munster final, so I'm trying to explain to a Pakistani doctor above in the COH, right, I want to be ready for Munster hurling final day, but he wasn't getting it right, you know. He says, no, your finger is very, very bad, so... I know, the Saturday I tried everything in my power and to need to get ready because Munster final day was special, having played in a few of them before, been captain, and going up against Tip and Turles, who were raging half favourites. But I had to go to Dr. Consos out in the back garden for the fitness test on the Saturday.
The regular.
So odd was right, you know. Was two hurleys. I put one up in the air and the con swung his hurley against mine, and it just dropped it out of hand with pain. So he says, "Can't forget about it, right?" So you
had to look at Kieran McGuckie.
Yeah, absolutely. Was a fantastic. I mean, for Kieran, I mean, fantastic player as well. So he was the Glen Rovers representative, and he was denominated captain that day as well. So going to Turles, like we're the passengers inside the dressing room in terms of sitting down, watching how things were going on, and. You know, the atmosphere was inside. It was incredible. And
how did the whole world thing go with the Babs interview that week, guys? Because he didn't really say, like, that you were donkeys. He was referring to you as great players.
That's all you wanted.
But it was never even used.
How that came out was, I tell you how that came out. We were training on Tuesday, and I think Joe Canning was doing the interviews at that time, and I think he was up in Tip over the weekend or maybe a Monday, and he's been interviewed, and I just threw it out to Jerry. I said, "What's their mood in Turles, like, you know, what's their, you know?" He said they're very, very confident, he said, to the extent, he said Babs turned around, he said, "Donkeys don't win derby," and I just left it out to one or two fellas, and I just grew legs. Then after that, that's all that came about.
So now you learn something new every day. That's the first I heard about that.
You just can't be careful enough from what you say, you know, because it's amazing how people like to turn things
with
the way they suit it.
Look, to be honest, I mean, it was never used.
Yeah.
Never used in the dressing, to be fair, right? I mean, you're going to play in Tipperary and Turles. You're seriously under that.
So the cannon didn't mention donkeys, man?
No.
It just kind of made the headlines.
I remember it clearly. I think Larry Tompkins had a pub on the across from the train station, and there was a painting on the window as people were heading to the station, heading to, and there was a big little clip, "Donkeys don't win derbies," right? And there was pictures appeared everywhere. So
I suppose you never really give toss to them all, like.
Well, I mean,
give donkey.
We're not going to we're not going to tell you whether it was said anywhere or not.
He's as sharp as ever.
I'm still
come here, lads, on the day, the big dentist student,
Matt Foley,
2-7. What a day, like, and hadn't been really hurt. No, I had played against him on that all conquering 88 under 21 team. I didn't see 2-7 coming in that Munster final, like, just
didn't see them, sir.
But I suppose if them days come along, lads, a lot of lads might settle for 2-1. Jeez, why not get 2-7?
We need him badly that day, I can tell you. He was outstanding.
Yeah, but look, the whole team and what the cannon brought to us, right?
We had to play for him to get it.
You know,
Fitzy got two goals as well, the same day.
Yeah, you know, and like. 1980, the way it set out, I mean, you mentioned National League, right? We played in the National League semi-final above in Northern Park on a bank called Le Monde. We got one point from play. We got hammered. There was hailstones came down. They were as big as golf balls. And all you could see was Jerk Cunningham at one end and he looking up to see who was going to put their hand up for a puck. And we were all, they were all turning away from our men.
Which he was knocking Dick O'Hara.
Oh, yeah.
I remember we walked down to length of the hotel after, you know, we walked down there and there was a couple of people up there, but we were walking back and we were kind of in disguise, like, you know what I mean? There was two people, I didn't know who he was, and it was a Cork fella, and he was literally crying coming down the street, like, he's in, where in the name of God are we going to go from here? Like, holy are written off, you know?
We played Kilkenny Sound.
Jeez, he was fierce. All we know is that we couldn't play that bad again.
And we got slated here.
I'm not joking, you know, and you might think Kilkenny should have won the same.
Christy Walsh.
You should have been.
You should have been taken off.
Teddy went to bed. Mr. Bob Knees, which I meant to say, I thought he was gone. I was standing there, I thought he was gone. But he went. But I got the softest goal I ever got. I went out to the sideline. I feed up the ball. There was no one you can play it. I just drove it low. I went across the line all the way. The keeper stuffed the front into his own net. And the fella said, I come out the ground, I met the fellas, because, you know, you have to pass him. And I said, Jesus, and he says, you won't be war from next round. And we beat him easily here. And, like,
the team
rolled on, didn't it?
Bit of winning momentum. And we were backed into corners on lots of occasions, right? And we got slated here in the press. It was incredible. And it's like, back those days, going to the away matches, we'd meet at St. Patrick's Church and it's always about who's going to be down for the first car, right? The boys used to be coming from East Cork contingent, but all the city boys get down to St. Patrick's Church, and who was the front seat of the car were Dr. Conn, right? And you could have had big Mercedes, seven-seaters, big Peugeot, seven-seaters, and it was all about getting into that car because he'd have all the newspapers, and then he'd have Kevin Cashman. Kevin Hinsey is the worst left hand in the country, and would be roaring, laughing. Well, he is useless.
John Fitzgibbon.
He's related.
He wrote a thing about me one day in that in the paper and said, when Kevin Hinsey goes on a solo run, he's like a fella going a long distance.
You're in the car now, and the doc has all this, and he's in the front seat, and he's reading all this out going up, and we're all in stitches, laughing and stuff like that, until we meet your man above the Thomas.
We were going to play the Thomas, and then, like, nearly it's been okay along with it. We had a minibus one time in the night. We saw your face come up. I speak to Tristan and I said, right, Dad, the bus is here.
You could nearly say half hour like us.
It was the right character.
Yeah.
And when someone taught me this, he was a pro boxer. I said, you were, I spent most of your time in your ass. Keith was a farmer, Irish distillers and fly to yeah. again.
Kid was the masseuse, but he was kind of the psychologist in the one bed, wasn't he?
Yeah, and the Battle of Jemison.
And the only head was special. Every midget in the place would cling to it. we were going to the same driving on the City Watch, and we were going up this day. We had a lift and drive, right? And I do in the door in there, and as we passed, I hung out the window. The boys were telling the kid in, to him, and he's driving the car. Who are you driving the car? Well, he came into me. He gave me dog's abuse. I couldn't say a word. I was busting. I said, kid, come on, to him out the front. Just, we stopped some place on the way up. And he was, right now, have a look now. Oh, Jesus, those were silly. That's brilliant. I told you something. They were after winding him up to get stuck in me. I was sitting right down the side of
you. But you need a character like that around the place.
I remember, we were on Medibur, which we had looking after. But I remember talking about the kid there one day, you know, it was 90, obviously, but I was kind of missing in action, you know. I went around the place. So it was an A versus B game here one Saturday morning in football. And of course, I didn't see the footballers training, but while I think they were kind of going back around West at the time for training, you know, around Dunmanima. I think there was kind of. So he was suspended at the time he was supposed to be training us. But so they were back there. So I was injured, so there was no reason for me to come back there. So I didn't see the boys for two or three weeks. I can't remember now. But I came in Saturday morning and anyway, matches were 11. I said, any new faces? I said, okay, there is. He said, there is. He said, I was looking up. Who's trying to take my shot here? Who's the new face? Kid? You, he says.
Where would you get it? So, lads, you celebrated the Munster final, got out, and you would probably celebrate it well that time, would you? You do a good Monday?
Not really.
We did, the city boys. The guys from the east weren't allowed into the...
You just did a quiet one outside.
He took it to Sarah's altogether. We used to go to Clancy's on the Monday, yeah. And to be fair to Dan Sullivan, he was the owner of Clancy's. And we had a great night on the Sunday night. Kieran McGuckin brought the cup back to the Glen as well on the Sunday night. It was a great night there as well. And the normal thing was stopping Welch's and Richardstone. It was great crack there and everybody got their own different way. But... Monday then was a great day out. We had a great crack. We go to Clancy's and Dan Sullivan, he was put a couple of quid into a pint glass.
It's 200 quid, was it?
Yeah, and a lot of money that time. Yeah. Here you are, lads. Your afternoon is free and he'd feed us. And we had great times, you know, great memories. And like, you could end up with a bit of a sing song in the evening and stuff. And
people love it, right?
You know, it's a great day and kind of time on your own and kind of, you know,
parked through as well, right?
And you're reliving the match and. You know, talking about different things and maybe, you know, and...
When we won the 84.
Centenary.
I remember we said, where are we going? No, where are we going? And John Finch comes out with the cup. He said, we've got up the boot into the
floor. That was it.
He controlled you, right? Because, like, even after 90, when we were lucky to win in 19, we got the trip. Overseas, we went to Toronto the following year and in the Sky Dome and played in the Sky Dome and stuff, you know. So,
I'm surprised I didn't get a
replacement. Pardon?
My man only got two balls.
We could kind of remember kind of trips where kind of might be kind of 7 in the morning and you're only going in through the revolving doors
just
in the hotel.
Coming
from Mass or whatever.
We've
from another morning.
Right?
Yeah.
And
there's Kevin and his minibus from East Cork and they all got out training, right? And we all waving at Kevin. You could see the disgust in his face. You could see the disgust in his face. We're on day with G.
We won the Centenary Cup that year.
The famous final.
And the cup was missing. And so it worked about, at the time now, over $2,000 in Waterford Glass.
Who was that?
I don't know who it is. But there was a board officer called to my door. I didn't invite him in either, let me tell you. He says, where's the...
No board welcome.
I've been instructed by the board, he said, to find out where the Centenary Cup is. I says, you know where it is, I know where it is, and you can go away and get it. I'm helping it. And it's still there. No, it's not now. It's moved up to our cabinet in the club, Middle and Jacob.
All right.
I was captain 1 year. I went out 1 year. He said, we'll never forget it. I went out to Rystip, remember? And to play Kilkenny, right? Now, they all turned up, all the Irish came turn up. And we all knew first that...
He's concentrating on an Ireland.
The ambassador, Irish ambassador, was coming out to present the trophy. So, surprisingly, we won, you know. And we don't forget the trophy anyway. Be huge, you know. They talk about dust collectors, like, it's the usual. So I got it. I got the port of me, you know, because I'm bound for the effort of this team. And I got it afterwards, and yeah, and they never came back for it. London, right? They never came back for it.
You still have that, so?
No, the club I've been on.
Okay, very good.
That museum out in Middleton is what going to. You negotiated the Antrim hurdle, but you faced into, I suppose, the favourites then. They had been kind of the team really around then, and there'd been the controversy over the Keely thing in 89, and they were back in the final again. And would you have feared them? Or I know it wasn't in your nature to fear them, but at the same time, they were kind of under Farrell, had changed the style of hurling, and you know, fellas like the Cunninghams, the Coonies, the Nocton's, the Innerines, you know, running game, the Hoppers and all these, like, going into it, like, there was no sense that the bookies had used outsiders, but yourselves, total confidence.
I wouldn't say total confidence, Anthony, but I'd say the build up to it, and kind of from the canon, and go back to my days, back in 86, Johnny Clifford, I was involved, and he always stated a Cork team well prepared would be hard to beat, right? And Galway had never beaten us in an All-Ireland final. And like the training that was out here in the build up to it, kind of you were gathering momentum, you knew, right? Okay, we were still rank outsiders, they were still hot favourites. But you knew there was something building within the team here. The couple of weeks beforehand, I mean, the backs and forwards that we used to have outside here, and we tore each other to pieces, right, you know? And it wasn't just 10 minutes of backs and forwards, you could have had 40, 45 minutes of it. And, like, it was 6 against 6, and you change out, and you were 3 fellas outside there with a couple of dozen slitters, and you didn't get a chance. Once the ball went wide, the next one was played again, and that was our hurling back then. That was our and you know,
and of course, then with you fellas coming back available since one sort of particular did 2 years was there was competition for places, and
massive competition.
Fellas like Carl Casey, I played in a Hardy Cup final against David Cook, he was same age as myself.
Very good player, great players. Carl Casey, very strong.
Very what you want, this was going into it.
It was very, very strong panel, yeah. They were great players, absolutely. David Quirk, Pat Buckley was a super player as well. And David came on the fine, yeah. But the training here was just incredible. And you're talking about the cannon ride and what they bring differently, right? I mean, we can remember days outside here, like, I mean, he'd arrive and he'd have the goalie bag, and he'd have the 2 dozen slitters on the shoulder and stuff like that, right? And part of the training was out here, he'd put down through the two dozen balls out onto the field, and you puck the ball up and down, left and right. Off the air, there was 20 minutes without catching the ball or putting it in the hand. It had to be hit, and you had to go and meet it, going left. If it's coming this way to your right, you had to hit it that way, off the left. Breaks out in front of goal, 20 yards, you pull in it. Cunningham's goal on one side, you had your power on the other side below. And that was it. That was most of the train. And if he wasn't happy, there was one night outside there, Carl blew the whistle. Remember that, did he? He went round, he picked up all the balls, permitted the goal away. Carl, that's not it.
Running.
Oh, he says, that's the worst I've ever seen. I'm out of here. Walk straight out the stadium, right? Out under the tunnel. Out under the tunnel.
When
this first time. Right, you know? And into the car, and you're going up over here at the marina, you could hear the screech of the brakes. And we're all outside. Jesus Christ, what do we do now? Those fellas laughing. You know, let them off, whatever. We'd no balls, we'd no slippers. We could even have a puck around ourselves.
But then
10 minutes later, you'd hear the car screech again. Out into the middle of the field again. Give you one last chance. You're useless.
Yeah.
And then for
a priest like
but he was great to get fellas going, and I'd throw the balls out again. And then for that 20 minutes, we bait the lard out of each other. You chased it.
Yeah.
That was getting into fellas' heads. He was brilliant that way. Brilliant.
Was training for Peter and the late
absolutely. And on the ground, getting the ball moving, that was our style. Yeah. You know, I mean, this guy got goals off the ground.
That was your job. That was training for Sylvie and Conor Hayes. And
oh, yeah.
You know, Mike Coleman, I suppose, and fellas like that.
Steve Mann
still there in 90, wasn't
he? He was the cornerback in 1990.
He was Smart Ryan, yeah.
He was Ali Kilkenny.
John Cummins was still there. You did the Cork ritual, as you're still doing, and you haven't been there in a while, I have to say, like, both since 13, but, like, the Burlington on the Saturday, train up, like, and... The whole country knew you were in the Burlington. The other team could be in hiding somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, in fairness, the Galway team, they've got to the Aisling, and that was well known as well.
Yeah,
packed out as well. Like, when I think of in our day, even 5 years on, we used to fly up in the morning and hide nearly in a hotel at the airport and come in. And of course, once you win, everything's right. Like, but the Burlington night was a fair ordeal that evening. Was it? Did you have to stay in your room? Like, you had a meeting room, obviously, upstairs.
No, we could. He's got to the Shelburne.
I know. You'd have a bit of dinner when you're
out. Shane Offey back out there, and the echo going up because, you know, he'd been pestered.
Who?
This is 1990,
no. I know, he said this was in Dublin.
Yeah.
But he was trying out inside to give out.
Tips to the dogs.
Yeah, what the bag, that's what I'd be doing. You know what I mean? And then you come down, and you were told you'd be back for 11. to for the clean coffee, right, and sandwich before you go to bed. So we took off up the road and to pub and have one or two pints and come home. There was no film with the dog in it, like, maybe one or two.
We went to the dogs, but we didn't do the dog in the drink.
We all made money in the dogs.
Like, that night, lads, and Shelburne must have been jammed, though, night for Ireland. It was nearly the Derby final, was it?
Yeah, it was big events there. But look, it was only just to get out of the hotel. But you couldn't stay around the hotel, it was just packed. And just to get out there, a bit of fresh air and stuff like that, and take our time coming back. But it was
where would you go up popping in for that pint or two? Like, and I have no issue with that.
Across the road.
It was across the road there. It was
Morrissey's
or O'Brien's or something like that, right? O'Brien's, right? And just go into the corner, right? And something might even have a pint. You might have one, right? Something that might have two, right? That was it, right? And have a own bit of crack and back then, and through the crowd up to your room or up to get your pint of milk or whatever, your cup of tea, and into bed. But it was hard to get a nice sleep then, Anthony. Do you know what I'm saying? It depends who you roomed with. Like, some fellas were very lucky.
I thought the East Cork fellas would run the East Cork fellas.
He was a bit of a pet for Frank Murphy, you see. So Frank says he slept in, he roomed with, right, in 1986 with Tom Cashman.
Yeah.
So Frank had it in his mind, he's going to put him with Mull now aside, right?
In the lucky charm, right?
Yeah.
You with Joe Fitzton after that 92?
Yeah.
That didn't look good.
You knew so much about him.
Yeah.
The
snoring wasn't bad, right? But the time clock, right? I mean, he walked above Watergrass Hill in place with Agri Meats, like, and it was kind of 5:10 the morning, I think. He was getting up at that time, right? So, all I can remember, Anya, and I'm looking at my clock, 5:30 in the morning, there's your man, Mull! You have to pull in the blinds and the curtains. 'Tis a great morning outside. I says, Kevin, don't close. You'll be going out through the window, right? All right. I'm up now, I won't go to sleep. In any way, next thing you'll hear the shower. Shower's on. The man's inside after shaving himself. He's inside singing away inside the shower. I said, Kevin.
It's a long day to have tree.
Jesus, long day to have tree.
Either way, I'm passionate.
And then he come out, right? And he said, "Jeez, I don't know, let's have breakfast yet." I said, Kevin, Jesus, let me sleep, will you? I'm walking around then, the next thing he's gone on for breakfast. I'll be back up now shortly, came up for breakfast again, and in the door, couldn't relax, hurling ball, up against the wall inside the room. Baiting the ball off the wall, and next thing to, I don't know who was inside the room next door.
So there was a couple.
No, players all after waking up. We go up to your man inside.
They booked out the floor.
Yeah.
And there was security agent. Oh, geez. I put him on. That's only half true anyway. Because I just walked about right at 5:30 in the morning. You see, only fellas going home that time, right? And but look, I mean, I just, you know, I wouldn't change a bit of the 13 years I was there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change one bit before or after.
No, it's great to look back like that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And Queer, Dr. Connell's telling me a great story while you were there, but Teddy, did you know much about John Fitzgibbon? Like, I know he was bursting onto the scene, 88 or 21, and He was a different sort of a fellow, wasn't he?
He was definitely a different character. A lovely character, no, but I suppose he was a bit like myself to an extent. But like, he was a kind of a guy that always went against the grain, I suppose, didn't he? A bit like, you know, he
a bit like yourself.
John would have been younger than me, you know, obviously, like, so I wouldn't have been clashed with him much at all, really, underage or anything, really, as such, but. The one thing I can remember, I think, to some All-Star trip, was it? He got an All-Star 1 year, I think.
Mm-hmm. He did.
And what's his name from Bellevue? John, he worked in the Bank of Ireland.
John O'Driscoll,
yes. But John was in the Bank of Ireland, All-Stars. And I think Fitzy was away in America, wasn't he?
He was in America. He was in Boston
last day.
So he came back and flew in just about an hour or two before the event anyway. So John O'Driscoll was deputised to look after him by the bank, you know. By God, he had some job trying to look after him.
To find him?
He was running around Dublin after him. He might be trying to slip him. He had to get a suit from a door.
He had to get a suit from the guy behind the desk and door.
That was his deputation.
So was Dr. Conn, through at him, what would he do if he got a goal?
Yeah, look back at kind of, and you talk about the matches and you talk about kind of the winning of the game, but like it's the friendships and kind of the stories that come with it as well. And like the morning of the match, Kevin, you know, inside the hotel above the lobby as well, it's just packed and people are looking for tickets, right? So it's a couple of us said, look, man, we go for a walk around, right? And Dr. Khan was the leader of the pack. He was the social man. He was way ahead of his time in terms of social media and all that. He was the man, right? So a few of us kind of went around, and there's John Fitzgibbon with us, and Constance to John. He says, if you score a goal today, how are you going to celebrate? Now, the history with John, the family and the Cashmans and the Christie Ring Jr. stuff of that, they just love Christie Ring Sr. And they knew everything, every game he played, every score he got, whether it was Munster Championship, whether it was Railway Cup. So John says, watch me if I score a goal today, right? And he took off along the footpath and about 3 or 4 steps up in the air and the two hands up in the air.
And he wouldn't wear a helmet because Rain didn't wear a helmet.
And he wouldn't wear a helmet. And he says, that's how I'm going to celebrate today. And like we were kind of laughing and stuff like that. Jeez, yeah. But that John had that belief himself. That's what he was about.
Yeah.
He had that kind of style of ring, and he was gape to get a ball off the ground. Like his goals off the ground were just incredible to watch. You know?
Yeah, anywhere relevant to this, I got to mark him in that 88 semi-final, and I was only out of my room. And I must have cleared 10 balls, and he got one puck ball.
I buried it.
Green flag.
Yeah.
But then, that's all he was interested in.
Yeah. But as the story goes then, right, during the match, Joe Fitzgerald gets injured on the far corner. So, like, we didn't have a great first half. Now, things weren't going well.
We'll come to that.
Yeah, all right, yeah. But during the second half, and I think early into the second half, and Joe Fitzgerald goes down, and Dr. Conn has to go on and attend him. And while he's attending Joe, he's looking over, and there's kind of Fitzy. He's just standing around, so passing back over by Fitzy. He says, whispered into his ear, what was all this thing this morning? You jumping up in the air, and you're getting a goal, and you're doing this celebration and all that. And the doc says, no sooner was he back in his seat, and there was 2 goals gone. Fitzy had got 2 goals. Yeah. So he had given him his answer pretty quickly. But that was John.
We were training here, just up into the city going now, and we were training, and I think they were trying to back some forwards, but they were playing with a 2-man full forward, and I think it was you, Kevin, you were told to go over or something like that, you know.
Sure, it was Revis.
But Fitzy was inside full forward. So the ball was supposed to be turned. I went to the channel, you know, where there was no corner forward. And so next thing, anyway, we were outside and we were turning the ball into it, and Fitzy was supposed to come out from the goal and collect it and do the business then after that. So we were hitting the ball, kind of going into the corner flag, and Fitzy went out once or twice. Then he down toes. He said, "Jesus, they're not going out there no more." He said, "He's been right coming back." So the next couple of balls went in anyway. Fitzy was still inside the square. He don't do it.
See, like, the Kennedy. Many other messages in the Kennedy, we were up here.
Sorry. And, he said, you won't score goals from the corner flag. He says,
he only told me that one time because you're going out. And the Kennedy got his own lines and we were about poking around. And, right, I want you all to get together now on your own lines and discuss the game. And Sunday, the team was picked back, we were laying out. And we had a man making his debut, right? Barry Egan. And we were playing Limerick. And I put forward and John was into the corner. And we were down and I said, for Barry's first time, I knew that. So I said, no, we give every head bar. Don't worry, I'll play like you normally play. You wouldn't have got your place unless you weren't playing normally. Right, Kevin. He said, what do you think, John? Yeah, Jesus. He said, if we don't beat this club, a point to many. He said, we're wasting the time. He's right, actually.
He wasn't that self-confident.
No.
But lads, you were all kind of lacking self-confidence from where I was standing while in the Canal Inn. It was the only place the Clare County Board could get a ticket for me. It was the Canal Inn. And I must say that overall, that's one of the greatest finals I ever saw. It was a great game of hurling. It was nearly before its time in one way, in terms of the scores and the passages of play. But like, I know you were only down 5 at half time, but I thought you wouldn't play it off the field.
Yeah.
And in particular, obviously, and great admiration for Jim as a player, like at that stage, Jim Cashman for me. But Joe Cooney was one of my favourite players in the country as well. He was on fire.
Jimmy Ted, he was Jim out. But Jim out the first day he went one.
Sorry about this, Jim.
You're not on, mate.
But listen, Jim
looked after you over the years, so you want to take it easy on him.
Jim won the game for the second half because he nailed your men down to a point. And, like, there was a big swing around. It was hard for a fella to bring himself up to say, Jesus, come on, I know I must do something. And he did, by and he caught him and scored, actually.
I know.
But, I mean, Thornton turned round. I mean, every fella has a bad day. Some of us more than most.
I'm marking your man as well. Your man was absolutely in his prime.
Class act, like, class act.
Yeah, I tell you, did you feel in the first half, this where we going here? Or we
I didn't feel the whole point.
I didn't feel the weight of the ball. But half time is legendary, lads. On this one, like, you know, I've read about it and I've heard tales about it. And
none of them true.
There was a bit of water splashed around and things like that. Was there?
And it was, yeah. I mean, look, I suppose coming in at half-time, we knew ourselves. I mean, you've been through that in yourself. You know, things are not going well. And as a team, they weren't going well. And we're probably lucky to be only five down. I mean, they had more chances. And no, having said that, if we had a good free taker as well, we might have been closer.
I missed two.
You missed two? But you missed two. We'd only been 3 points down. We'd only been three down if you scored the two. And they were in front of the goal, easy freeze.
Jeff Chuck, when you stopped for 1-7, you're in front. No, the free taking came about, pretty fast now. The free taking came about by. I was coming round to the field one night, and Mac Foley, with the Ken, he's all the new balls. He doesn't hear, because it doesn't hear, and it doesn't hear. What's going on, lads? And Ken says, he's practicing free taking. I had to wipe him, I said, no? Oh, you're very smart, don't you? He said, right, she said, put on the balls in here, lads. And we were keeping counting, of course. And I beat 40. Like, I should have told you that. They were wasting that. The meeting, there was an industry technical course in freeze. First one in here. But that year, I got one free against it when I got it. Right?
100%. Very good.
I got the holy water out of the pocket and I gave it a shake, the ball. Like, right away, and I got it. The next time, there was no easy freeze those days. But we were down and fine then, yeah, and I missed the first one, 45 yards out in front of the goal. But I got the ones after. And I missed one later on, all right. But, you know, when you're taking the freeze, you just say, I'm going to get it, and that's it.
Crucially, we've got a goal, like.
48 seconds, was it?
48 seconds, is still.
Is this a record?
It is. They're not on fine.
There you go,
mate.
We didn't want to say that to him, all right, but he remembers it, though. He pulled it across to me.
In the microphone, they're a bit closer to you. Never say that again.
And I just say to you now, every year I sit down and put the other hand fine.
Sweating.
No.
With clock?
Yeah.
The sweating coach, yeah.
Random still.
What's the 49 second ticks?
Yeah.
You're happy.
He's happy.
Like, the cannon at half time, like, he fairly called you out, even though, like, legend has it he was on his knees.
He was, yeah.
The man, and I know he was a man of prayer, did he? And they had to hit the knees fairly often around then, but like, he just called you out completely on it.
And he called up for his din, so he stand up there, and he found a bucket of water at him. Did you? Oh, it was freezing water, like.
Well, legend has it he only said three fellas could hold their head up at half time.
I know we are going here now.
Well, now, you know, I only hear these things.
Well, he said, I've only 3 4 playing for me now. And I put my hand up like, it wouldn't bother me at all. Just Frank or him, I'd say it. Where's the other fellow with me? Who is the other fellow with me? And they all started laughing, right?
Yeah, and then, I think I think, you know, that's my recollection, I think. Took huge pressure off us.
Huge
tension was there for 12 or 14 minutes, and then someone cracks a joke.
Yeah, and like, does only he get away with it? Does anybody else say that they'll be probably taken off or something like that, you know? But does he get away with it? And where I felt it just, you know, this tension, this cloud over has just lifted, you know? And just in case, let's just might as well go out and enjoy it now, see what it takes us.
Of course.
And that's basically what happened. That's the way I felt coming over.
Yeah, look, it is legendary, and it is what it is. It was said, right, and he did put his hand up, and we were all witness to that, right? And yeah, there was guys taken into the shower area, and there was ice buckets of water, take off your jerseys, thrown up against ice, time you started waking up. Yeah. Right? This is All-Ireland final day.
Yeah.
You have 35 minutes to get it right, you know? And 30 minutes to get it right. And but the key was, he broke the ice in one sense, right, to say what he did. But the Cannon was special as well, though, that time, because he was down on his knees. There was tears in the eyes. The jersey was in one hand, and do it for yourself, and do it for your parish, and do it for your community and your family and stuff like that, right, you know? And like John Fitzgibbon wanted to know after the match when he came in, was who put the onion in the Cannon's bag at halftime to make him cry, right? That's John Fitzgibbon wanted to know, right? So there was a fair bit of wit, no,
you were merciless,
yeah. There was a fair bit of wit, I mean, and like, it didn't work that well anyway when I went down to the field, because we went from 5 points to 7-0, right?
The lad's been in the canal. I can still see Martin Nocton.
Yes, Nocton doing a goal. Yeah.
It was a 17.
I know it was a 17.
It was not, Kevin. What do you mean?
It wasn't given, but he's interviewed in the dressing room afterwards, and there's a mark here on his forehead. Which is a great save in film.
Oh, he put his head right
here. Like, I mean, and straight from the puck out. Straight from the puck out, baby Jesus got a pint.
Yeah.
You know.
He did, but like, we ran at him, didn't we? And that was our plan.
And while you came to centre at that stage.
Yeah. I mean, look, Andy, you know yourself. All-Ireland final days, you get a bit of luck. We had a bit of luck. I mean, we could have been further behind at half time. We had 7 points down. That Martin Nocton obviously was a 65, right? And or 70, as Kevin called it, right? But you got the stroke of luck. It was a lucky call. I mean, everybody that was there at home in the ground, right? Oh, the umpires didn't see it, or how the referee didn't see it. It should have been a 70, right? Yeah, you know, and we got away with it, and we got the score that mattered afterwards. So we started getting momentum back in them, and as Kevin said.
And then after your goal, you kick for home, and probably you could sense watching that day in the canal. There was loads of Galway. I think the Cork supporters on the hill, and lots of Galway supporters, and you could sense by them they were beginning to get spooked. Mm. You know that here come Cork. You know, we haven't beaten Cork ever in a final, and that kind of you could feel it to the head.
Probably couldn't feel it in the pitch that day, but it was just look. You know, it's the old cliche goes with matches, and we scored five. Like, you know, it's a case of 7 points down, sure a goal, and you're only 3 or 4 points in it, this game on again, you know. So I think once we got the first goal in the second half, we just believed in ourselves then, and we got a momentum going, and it was a case then like running down at Galway, and I suppose there was probably a bit of disbelief that started creeping in their mind in a bit at that stage, you know? But as I said, it's the goals. You know, you can see the scoreline after five goals is a lot in any All-Ireland final, irrespective. And it is rare to get 5 goals from one team now in All-Ireland, you know. So that's to me, this goals won the game for us.
Yeah, and you went for goals as well. That was
I think that was part of our training down here, Anthony, was like, it was always about giving the ball to the guy in a better position. You got inside your man, you were heading for goal, there was somebody coming to you, there was a man free inside, give him the ball. And like, We had so many games that we had played. We were a great team to get goals. Great team, whether it was Kevin, John Fitzgibbon, whether it was Geoff Fitzgerald, Matt Foley, whatever like that. A lot of goal scorers in the team, right? And once you got the possession to these guys, there was nothing in their mind, only goal. I mean, this guy, to me, was one of the most underrated. Not because he's sitting alongside me, because I've seen and I played with him for 10 years, 11 years, right? The amount of goals that this guy got at crucial stage of matches. Mm-hmm. I mean, he got one in 86. Right, and you can see there's the clip I remember is Jimmy Barry Murphy on his knees as the ball hit the back of the net. Your man, and he'd no teeth. I think he had no teeth at that stage.
He was doing the old Joe Bradley.
He was doing the Joe Bradley crowd, and
teeth in my pocket. And they were, you want me to prove it? Yeah, don't you know?
Liz, I suppose even though Brendan Linsky got a late goal for Galway to give him a little bit of hope, but you kicked on, and well, you got the dream. I suppose we all dreamt about it. Lucky to go up for it is unbelievable.
I suppose it is. You've been there as well, and it is an incredible honour. But look, it's about the team and about the whole, you know, caring to cap the team in Munster. I came back into the team and captained them for the All-Ireland. But you say about the captain going up the steps. You say about going up the Hogan Stand steps, right? But it's just as important for the player as well that you could actually go up there as well, because when you see the pictures, the players are up alongside you as well, and it was fantastic. And I kind of said there the other day, kind of one memory that I take from when I see back the matches now, is like three seats behind in the Hogan stand where the cup was my hero. And my probably biggest regret is that I didn't go back and bring him up to me was Jack Lynch, right? We'd met him that night, former Cork captain, former Glen Rovers man as well, but like he was my hero. Like he was just a man of charisma, as Taoiseach and all that, right? But when you follow in the footsteps like that, it's fantastic. But it was about the team, and it was an unbelievable team performance in the second half. Defensively, brilliantly. Forward line, absolutely superb.
Now, Lauren, could Cork J still do with him around, but Fianna Fáil could certainly do with him around at the moment. But,
Mary Lou is good.
She's looking good at the moment. Overall, looking at the team, like, it wasn't really a team like John Considine had never played minor or 21. As you said, Shani Gorman played full forward the previous year. Yeah. Brendan Sullivan, like Valley Rovers. The Kenan would have been a Valley Rovers man if I remember. I was kind of saying Brendan Hu just after the year, but he played a good role for you. Like,
he stayed the art of going for it, you know what I mean?
And up, meeting half forwards, getting forward. Yeah. Covered
he was a bit of an unsung hero. Jeez, he took a lot of punishment now, you know, he truth.
He didn't.
As to say, he took put his body on the line, you know, he just, you know, like, he didn't shy away from nothing. No,
he was a bit of a character to it.
And, like, midfield, even the odd time we did see that they came, he put in a big shift, a big oar, like, he broke up a lot of guys around the middle anyway, didn't he?
He kept
the ball going the whole time, you know. He just moving on the ground or whatever the case may be, but Jesus, there was a lot of sore going with fellas coming off him because he took no prisoners.
You take that Anthony as well, right? Like, I mean, when it was, I think it was a couple of weeks back in TG Carr, I think it was, we were in lockdown mode and we were all sitting in, it was Sunday afternoon, it was raining, it was wet, and fellas were texting each other, look, 1990s on at 2 o'clock, right? And Dr. Khan had rung me about 1:30, right, to tell me, he says, would you ring your own 3 or 4 fellas there and tell them the match is on at 2:40, because they won't want to see the first half. Right? This is the conversation that we had, right, you know. But when you look at it, right, I was giggling to myself inside the room as I watched it, Brendy Sullivan and Shawnee McCarthy. Anything that moved above the blade of grass, they flaked it. I tell you now, they ran into Galway fellas.
But again, Shawnee at the start of the year probably wouldn't have been.
Brilliant, right?
He was fine. Ballinhassig at the time. Ballinhassig were going well as well.
Going very well. But the ground hurtling, the movement of the ball was just incredible, right? And, like, Teddy says I shouldn't have got man of the match, and he's probably right. Look, Sean O'Gorman at cornerback was fantastic.
Hordy under 14.
Yeah, sure. But Sean O'Gorman, right, coming from Milford and stuff like that as well, having played full forward the year before. Jeez, to give a man of the match performance like he did, he should have got man of the match that day, but to give a man of the match performance a cornerback, right, fantastic. And you know,
great fullback,
we kind of get all the credit, and these guys, it's a panel, right, and it's a team, and like these were superb players, right, you know.
And come here, lads, you brought it home, obviously, to Grand Parade, the usual fantastic scenes. I know you'd all been through it before, but fantastic for you. Teddy, how did you, like, you had a football final coming up 2 weeks later.
Did you join us in Beamish and Cromer on the Monday or the Tuesday? Or the Tuesday? Oh, or did you stay away from your training? No, he was probably training that night. Was
he wasn't.
I was nearly sacked. Was he?
What?
I was nearly sacked. I was. I remember. I came in with a pair of jeans or something.
That's right. That's a Jamaica.
Unshaven, but for the previous couple of years I was driving a Foxy, and of course they had no control over me in the Beamish and Cromer at the time, but I was after Giant Sales Force then at that stage. Of course, I went in as I normally do in a pair of jeans and unshaven. Certainly not. Yeah, so I remember I was only repping off 6 or 7 months at the time, and following morning, 1 in the morning, Wednesday morning, I think we went in to report to work anyway. Next thing, the area manager, Michael Barrett, he said, we're just chatting away, but Dave's working out ahead of us, and he said, look, phone rang. I said, that's John Beasley there, he wants to see you, that's the sales director. He wants to see you down. I went in a big office like this, the door was over there. The door was wide open, he was looking out the window, I knocked at the door, there was a seat at the other side. He didn't even look around. He said, sit down. Oh, good Lord, this is what I have to do here now. And he met the other manager after sending me down saying, he's only welcome into the sales force, you know. Jeez, he did the right act to me. Good Lord, love us. So I don't know whether it was fired or sacked or what. And he just basically got me. And he wants to kick in the arse, like, and slap in the back and kick in the arse, you know. But he just said, look, he says, I know you play with two teams, he said, but he said, this is your team now as well. And he said, you're carrying the company colours and all that. And he said, we expect a lot more from our salespeople, you know. So, well, it was all new to me, you know.
Yeah.
Coming from afar, he said, 6 months previous. And so I went back up to Michael Barrett, and Michael's a lovely man, and I said, well, he said, congratulations. I said, for what?
Welcome to the sales force.
I told him, Michael nearly collapsed on Friday. So I was sent home for the day.
And Ted, did Billy cut you a bit of slack for a few days?
I did. Yeah. We didn't go train. She was out back towards it. But she was 2 weeks then. So there was no problem there. The management team, they were very good, you know. They're very understandable. We're supposed to say that easier now because, as I said, there's no back door. So,
yeah.
You know.
It'll never happen again, I don't think.
The worst scenario that we played the double one, or played the 2-1 year, was that I think we played Kilkenny up, and Ben and Collie didn't know. We played Kilkenny here, and I think, on the Sunday, and we played down open Ballincollig in the National League, and that was, we played a half up there and a half here. That was the closest ever came to being, you know, kind of getting tied up in the tube, and, you know, that situation. But other than that, it worked great. There was no problem. But I suppose when you have a bit of talent on your side, it's supposed to help too, doesn't it?
That's it. You're 14 for the sober, and you're
driving page, you can't pay.
Exactly.
Yeah, and look, just to put that, before Moyle gets a chance to tell it, like, famously there, I'd say around 98, 99, a few of my friends on the north side of the league there, they brought me to a pub in Blackpool, and I was introduced to this old lad sitting at the bar, and...
old lad.
Yeah, well, I think he had won, when the Glen won the 8 counties in a row.
That's right, Jay.
He won 4 or 5 of them.
He did, yeah.
Ringing in lads, right, and I was introduced to him.
Sonny,
he said, oh, you're a clear man, he says.
Sonny Buckley, yeah.
You're a clear man, he says. Nice to meet you. Just being polite. He'll roar in there about 2 All-Irelands in 100 years. He's a Teddy Mackle, 2 and a 4. Just get in before you won there.
No, it's been an all right.
The story has become legendary.
I had, yeah. I burned you a few times on that one, all right, Jay.
Thank God we've won another one since, actually.
I spoke about this man, but this guy, I mean, what he has achieved, right, is just incredible. And I know people, you can love or hate this guy. We get on very well together. We have our arguments. And we argue about hurling, and we argue about football. But this man, there's so much passion about him, and like, for the sport that he played, and I know people might say, oh, it will never happen again, and it probably won't happen again, but what he's achieved is just incredible. I mean, 2 All-Irelands within the space of a couple of weeks. It was just incredible, right? And, like, I mean, it wasn't just a flash in the pan. He did it consistently over the years, right?
Well,
you
I
know,
most
of the finals,
one,
you know?
Yeah. First year in Lance,
yeah.
I knew songs about him. And bring it forward 8 or 9 years later, and be doing the double.
It's incredible, yeah.
But just I don't know, some flip piped up to me, they were all talking about the double, you know, in the 2 weeks. But, geez, a fella told me, he says, I won 3 in 1 year, he says. Mm. 3 medals in 1 year. I said, how did I do that?
Yeah.
Sure, he said, the 89, he says. Does that were in the calendar, did you Eklund, do you? That's one for you now.
No, it didn't double Teddy, no, it's just treble Teddy.
Just for fear anyone has any ideas of winning a double.
Since Zoom came in, it's meant to do it for Clare. When I come down, like, to start the debate, you had to do that much. But you had a winter of content, the double, like, it's incredible. And did you, was there so many functions together with the football team and the hurling team?
I can't remember.
If any of it caught you, unless Jay come for a pint, you'd want to see one. But every night was every Fort. Night, yeah.
And I always looked, there was great days out, I suppose. Look, the big thing really was I remember kind of getting a call from the county board for the day of the final of the football. Obviously, there's 2 tickets for you. We want you to go to the match and bring the cup with you, just in case, right? So you're throwing the cup into the boot of the car in a black plastic bag, and you're parked outside Croke Park, and kind of 10, 15 minutes left in the match, like, just touch and go, all right? And then, kind of, you don't realise afterwards, like, what has been achieved and what this man has done, right, to the 2 All-Irelands, and then the cup is brought out to function that night, and then coming down on the Monday. I mean, Patrick Street, I don't know, I was there, Kevin, everybody came up. We were back early. The hurlers that went to the match, we were all back early. We had our own bit of a party in Satan Town, yeah. Until these guys arrived. And look, I'm sure a couple of weeks.
We met the lads earlier, and Larry and Connor, and you know, just legends of that era as well. It's been fantastic to chat about it, reminisce about it. We could be here all night, no doubt about it. Fantastic achievement. I don't know if it'll be done again. I suppose the likes of Cork or the team, maybe they might do it again. Could happen. There's Galway with a party Joyce and a good hurling team. The Dubs might do it, but that didn't happen either. You could pay to that as well.
Do you have a chance to do it? That footballs are coming good now.
I don't know. I think that happened, Kevin, and it might be gone again. But yeah. Look, anyway, lads, the main reason we're here is, I suppose, reminiscing and all that and celebrating the 30 years of the Dub. Also, Marymount, lads, that's crucial for us all. I think the €4 text thing for people all over the country, if you see this, you know, it's a great cause. We'll all be glad of facilities like it. And look, if you can support Marymount, I think that's the most important thing we take from today.
Can I just reiterate that, right? That's the purpose of us kind of being here. That's what's going on around the county over the last couple of days. Wednesday the 16th is a Go Red Cork Day, and anybody that's out there and will listen into this is just, look, if you can make any type of a donation, it's text Marymount at 503-00, you know. So anything will help. And look, we've all been touched with cancer. This man on my left has had his fair share of it as well, and isn't it great that he's with us today, right? And the work that they do in Marymount is absolutely fantastic, and I think that's why your people are probably here, and maybe all outside of Cork. And maybe inside Cork, they're probably sick of hearing about 1990 and about the Dubble. There was other great teams and won all Irelands afterwards, but there's a special couple of days about this, and we just that's important that we're here because of that as well, because of Miriam.
Well, and that's, you're given. You're not just taking all the credit for doing the Dubble. You're given back, and I think that's huge. I won't wear red. I will contribute. Is that all right, Kevin?
No.
That do?
No.
Okay. I wear a red face mask for an hour.
Full hog or nothing.
That's great stuff. Pleasure. Thanks, Teddy, Tomas, and Kevin. Thanks
for recommending. Anyway, cheers.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.